Good morning. You're listening to Central Wisconsin's 24-hour information station, WFHR. It's time now for the Morning Magazine.
Welcome, everyone, to Morning Magazine for this February 17th, 2023, 10:05 on the clock, and you have your host, James J. Mailoff, here. At 10:30, we're going to welcome in our friends from Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater, Streetcar Named Desire. We got some of the actors from that coming in. Looking forward to it. Right now, looking forward to a good conversation, as we always have. Wisconsin State Senator Patrick Teston joining us on the phone right now. Good morning, Patrick.
Hey, James, how are you?
Been doing good. How are you doing?
Well, I'm doing great. It's actually, I'm in Wisconsin Rapids as we speak. I'm doing one of my on-the-job series here at Mid-State Technical College, and I'm sitting right across the table here from Dr. Shelley Mondyke, and so I'm looking forward to spending a whole day here at Mid-State to highlight what great opportunities that our technical colleges have for individuals right here in central Wisconsin.
What kind of things will you be doing with the staff over there today?
Yeah, so I mean, to kick things off, today's one of their discovery days. So they had middle school students from area schools, Pittsville, Port Edwards, and Grant. Excuse me. And it's a really great program that they've had for several years now, where they're trying to introduce students at a younger age, particularly in middle school, to try and see what really interests them and then kind of put them on a pathway as they advance through high school and then, you know, thinking about after high school, what their next steps are going to be, whether it's going to a great technical school like Mid-State or to a four-year university or in the trades, just knowing that there's a lot of opportunities out there. And so, and then later this afternoon, we're going to be having a monthly update. We're going to be talking to student ambassadors, taking a look at the diesel mechanic or engineering department. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really excited because, as you well know, as we've talked about many times in the past, is that there is a huge demand right now for workers. And we have to do everything that we can to develop our next generation of workforce here in the state. And it's places like Mid-State Technical College that provide just some of the wonderful education experiences in the entire state.
I couldn't agree more. Love our friends at Mid-State. They join us a couple times a month, and we love talking to the I get a kick out of it. I know the audience does. But most importantly, the education that they are able to offer, the hands-on approach. The fact that so many things, like at Mid-State, as far as continuing your education or even going there for a 2 or 4 year degree, they are going to work with you. They make it hard for you not to want to continue your education. They almost give you no excuses. If you're having financial problems, they'll work with you. Scheduling, they'll work with you. Just incredible people over there.
Oh, without question. And it's truly a testament to the great leadership team that's over here. I mean, just from the top down, just tremendous individuals, and including Dr. Mondyke, who's here with me. I mean, it really is a point of pride when I go down to Madison and talk with my colleagues. And we're great. There are so many great technical college systems, but I truly do believe that Mid-State is really at the forefront of it all and the tip of the spear in so many different ways.
Recently, you were joined by some of Wisconsin's DECA kids with the DECA program. They stopped by the office. How did that go?
Well, unfortunately, I was not able to be with them in person. I had a committee hearing yesterday on the Agriculture and Tourism Committee, but my staff got to meet with them. Great program, great students. My staff said it was a great conversation. I saw that they got to take a picture right behind my desk. And, you know, it's always great when, you know, students in programs such as DECA get to come down and see the Capitol and really show their interest and really, you know, to learn more about state government.
School programs like that, too, always deserve a highlight, and any chance we can talk about them, I think they're really beneficial. We are just, of course, beginning talking about Mid-State. I think the things go hand in hand. Programs like DECA, Debate, those kind of programs, they help kids gain some confidence, learn some things, and maybe find their passion or find a way to go. I'm curious, were you in DECA or Debate or anything in high school?
No, I wasn't. I wish I would have had more programs like that available to me. I had to learn it on my own, and obviously I've managed to apply a lot of those skills that DECA teaches as I get to debate mm-hmm. issues in committee on the floor. And so I guess it took me a while to get there, but I'm learning some of the skills that they teach in DECA.
Well, and not to, you know me by now, Patrick, I take everything too seriously, of course, but not to do that with this subject, but I have to say, kids learning how to, the difference of debating and fighting, Like, that seems very important right now, not just with politics, but just in society in general. The idea that you can talk with somebody, have a conversation, not see eye to eye, and still leave that conversation without insulting each other or anything like that. That's the purpose of DECA, of debate, of getting kids being better at conversationally, understanding the nuances of conversation better, how to communicate with each other. Those things I don't think we can take lightly going forward, especially with the world we're in right now.
No, and that's a great point. I mean, especially in today's day and age where our political environment is very divisive, I would almost say borderline toxic, and it's important that we be able to have a civil dialogue and respect each other's positions and differences of opinions, and knowing that we may not always agree and agree to disagree at times. In fact, I often joke if I didn't talk to Democrats, I wouldn't talk to my own parents, and that's not really an option for me. I mean, a prime example, you know, I was just down in Madison after we had the state of the budget address that was delivered by Governor Evers. A number of us, you know, ended up going out, and, you know, I sat at a bar stool right next to Representative Katrina Shankland, who's obviously a Democrat, and we had a really nice conversation. We bought each other a drink, and it was really great because it was an opportunity to actually have a human discussion one-on-one. I mean, no cameras around, and, you know, really getting a better understanding with one another and knowing that we may not always agree, but we've always been able to have a cordial relationship and work together. And I think that's what's missing in a lot of today's conversations is that there's more that we agree on than we disagree on. And as I've often said, you know, we've got to find that common ground and define the playing field if we want to actually get results done. And I think that's one thing that has been shown to us, especially after the November elections with split government, is that, you know what? People want Democrats and Republicans to work together. And there are a lot of areas where I think we're going to find commonalities. It's just a difference on how we get there. But at the end of the day, doing what we can to best represent the people that we were sent down to Madison to serve.
I think it it also helps. I don't think the onus is on you as politicians to do this, but I think it helps hearing things like that, you and Katrina having a drink together. I remember as a kid growing up hearing all these stories from the Washington Post about this congressman and this congressman going to a restaurant across the street and working out a bill, that kind of thing. And they were both from opposite sides of the country, opposite sides of the political spectrum, but they'd go and have dinner together and go back to work and get this bill passed. Like, things like that used to get done. Now we have such divisiveness that more stories like that, as simple as it might seem, I think that helps society, people, you know, get more comfortable, normalize that a little bit more. We get back to a little bit more of that because the onus shouldn't be on you guys as much as I think the you know, people, citizens, thinking for themselves and you know, having a little bit of a, just having enough brain power to and bandwidth to realize, hey, maybe they get along even though they don't politically.
Yeah, no, I agree. And that's what's so great about Wisconsin is that some of the best work doesn't always get done in the marble halls of the Capitol. Sometimes it gets done or sitting at a bar stool with a cold drink and a order of cheese curds.
Right. I'm perfectly said, sir. Speaking of talking politics, you recently had a chance to talk with some folks from Wood County about county government and the challenges of that. What came up in that conversation?
Yeah, we've had a lot of great discussions over the last several weeks, and especially now as I serve on the Joint Finance Committee and as we dive into the budget right now, there's a lot of conversations going on as it relates to shared revenue and trying to find a more equitable way to ensure that we do a better job of trying to fund local units of government, because just like everyone are facing budget challenges right now, whether it's because of inflation as we try and make our way out of the wake of that was caused by the pandemic, there's putting a lot of strain on people across the board. And so it was great. We had a number of folks down from Wood County, from Rock Larson to Brandon Brewink, from folks within childcare. And so we had a really frank discussion on kind of where things stand and the challenges that they're facing. And the good news is it does seem as though there is an appetite in on both sides of the aisle within the legislature to hopefully have a meaningful dialogue and find a solution to come up with a better formula for shared revenue. And I know this has also been coming up as, you know, even with the technical colleges, because they have some challenges as well that I'm sure Shelley would love to dive in and provide some of her insight on.
Mm. Oh, I didn't know if she was going to. Sorry, I wanted to just that's fine. I would love to hear that, though, sometime. I agree with you. That'd be good. Speaking of this conversation, and you mentioned the budget address, got to get into that a little bit with you. After the Efner Governor Evers addressed, you put on social media and you mentioned in your press releases, and I just want to put the sentence out there, the statement out there for people that did not hear it. Tonight, Governor Evers proposed a laundry list of liberal spending. This means that the legislature must again lead the way by crafting a responsible, forward-looking budget. We will make key investments to grow Wisconsin, not government. So two questions here, sir. One, what do you specifically mean by crafting a responsible, forward-looking budget?
Yeah, so first and foremost, so the governor outlined a budget address, and his budget address would increase GPR spending by 23% in the first year of the budget. We have never seen a budget increase like that ever before in the history of Wisconsin. That when you look at the budget in brief that was prepared by the nonpartisan Legislative Fiscal Bureau for the fiscal year 27, it would put us at minimum a $700 million budget deficit. So we would be going from a nearly record $7.1 billion surplus to a budget deficit within just a few short years. And so when you take a look at some of the proposals that have been put in his budget, it's really concerning to me when we've got provisions in there that are deeply troubling that we have shot down in the past. And so as we've done in the previous two budgets, we're going to operate off the base budget and we're going to build upon that. And as we have proven in previous budgets, we can still make critical investments in areas such as K-12 education, within our technical colleges, our UW system, within healthcare, within infrastructure, and still provide historic tax relief. Because the one thing I keep trying to explain to people is that while, yes, when you hear the headlines that we have a $7.1 billion surplus, in actuality, it's only about a $3 billion surplus, because much of the surplus that we currently have right now is being driven by one-time money. So the state of Wisconsin received roughly $60 billion from federal funds in response to COVID relief, whether it was direct stimulus payments to individuals, direct payments to counties, local units of government, our education system, and then a large glut of money that was given to Governor Evers' administration to dole out for COVID relief. As a result of that, and on top of the 40-year high inflation, as price of goods have gone up, well, so has our sales tax. And that's why for a number of us within the Republican-controlled legislature are advocating for doing what we can to try and shift some of that surplus back to the taxpayers in significant tax reform and tax relief. Personally, I would love to get us to getting rid of the state income tax, but I think Leader Lemieux has put forward a thoughtful proposal on what could get Wisconsin to a flat tax within 4 years, where all tax rates are at 3.25%. So we can be more competitive compared to our Midwestern neighbors and really use that as an economic driver to help fill some of the void and challenges that we're facing as it relates to workforce here in the state.
When it comes to some of those concerns, though, some of that money, it feels like some of this is we're going to have to spend some money. The idea that we can just sit, stand packed and not do anything. One of the things we heard overwhelmingly going into the elections was the most recent election was inflation and that. You listen to Warren Buffett, you listen to some of the people, we just got ahead of things a little bit, but this was always going to happen. We are always going to have higher prices of things. How do you balance matching that raise of increase of everything with also trying to take care of some of these things that are very important and the being responsible with spending?
Well, I think we take the same thoughtful approach that we've done in the previous two budgets, because we have to be very cautious that if we were to go ahead and rubber stamp and approve what the governor has proposed, and let's say, for instance, the economy takes a downturn in the next couple years, that would put us in a very difficult position where we'd probably have to come in, do budget repairs, pass austerity budgets to help fill the void in the gaps where, we've had budget discrepancies and deficits. And so, you know, I do think as it relates to things like education, you know, we've been having conversations and every budget that I voted for since I've been in the legislature, we have made significant increases in the areas such as K-12 education. In the last budget, you know, because of the federal money that came in, we are able to match the state's obligation to fund K-12 education at 2/3 funding. And I think that's going to continue to be the trend as we move forward. But again, if we're going to get into a tug of war of who can spend more, the Governor Evers versus the Republican legislature, we're never going to win that battle. But that's why, from our perspective, we have to be very careful and thoughtful on the approaches that we take and make targeted critical investments in key areas, while also taking a look at the long-term impacts of what we do to ensure that for future legislatures and as we work on future budgets, we don't create such a massive hole that we have to climb out of it and cut critical key services, which I don't think anyone wants.
One of the other things that I think we're also looking for, with the, not just so much the budget address is part of this, but just overall childcare. I'm going to bring this up every time we talk. I'll bring it up with Representative Krug, Representative Shankland. I'm going to keep on continuing to bring up childcare. If anything else, even if it's only a 2-second conversation, just bring it up. It's something everything we talk about as far as keeping people, young people in state working here, bringing new people into this state, all of this stuff. One of the major things, you look at the surveys, you look at what people are looking for. They want to know that. They want to know that there's good childcare in that state. Are we doing things? Are you and your colleagues working on that as well?
Yeah, I think this is going to be another key area where I think we can find common ground, whether it's taking a look at existing programs and how things are structured over at the Department of Children and Families and trying to do a number of things. One, we realize there's a huge issue here. There's a pay disparity as it relates to child care providers. There are some bottlenecks within the system that I think if we had some regulatory reform, we could open up and make it a little bit more easier. And then I do think also we have to think creatively and find ways that allow both a private, public-private partnership, and whether it's utilizing tax credits or other types of incentives to open up more slots for individuals. Because I know as I talk to child care providers within my own area, we got waiting lists upwards of 2 to 3 years. So it's very difficult for young families to plan that out when, if lo and behold, surprise, we're going to have a kid in 9 months, and the waiting list is 2 years, and you don't have family nearby, that's a real problem. And I know a lot of employers are coming to the table. In fact, last week I had a conversation with Angel Whitehead over at Synergy, and this is one of their top priorities. And, Dr. Mondyke wants to weigh in because I know this has been a topic of conversation here at Midstate and in some of the programs that they provide as well.
It has. We very much, Senator Tustin, thanks for kind of just talking about that, because we have a program, early child care, so we're trying to do our best to get our graduates out. But any help with some of the regulations and just the ability to be able to do more for our region is critical. I know we're sitting on a number of different task force to what can we do as an educational partner to be able to help this child care desert that we hear about.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate the feedback. Thank you. Great to hear from you. We should talk more about this, too. I'd actually love to be able to just have a time where we get a good group of representatives and people like yourself on the air, and we can talk about this subject, like spend a whole half an hour on it and talking about it. That'll be a future show. I did have one last thing I wanted to touch on with your comments about the budget address, sir. And I want to make it very clear, I hate nitpicking, and I'm not trying to pick on you, because everybody does this. It's more about just a rhetorical question. In your response, one of the things that you say is Governor Evers proposed a laundry list of liberal spending. The term liberal spending feels divisive. And you're not, again, you're not the only person that does this. Every politician does this. But we talk about divisiveness. We talk about getting more connected than apart. Are terms like that needed? Are they necessary?
Well, I think we're calling it what it is. I mean, I don't, when someone calls me and says, well, you're a conservative, I don't view that as a derogatory term. That's what I am. And I've never been ashamed to say that. And, you know, I think that was the one thing that was actually kind of liberating within the governor's budget address, is that he was showing us and telling us exactly who he is and what his priorities are. And obviously, you know, again, there's areas within his budget that I think we can find compromise on and find common ground. But when you take a look at just some of the policy that was thrown in there, I mean, it is deeply troubling. I mean, I've already had a number of individuals reach out to me and say, please do not go along with everything that's within the governor's budget. And I have to assure individuals, like, look, this is just the start of a very long process. The members of the Joint Finance Committee, we are going to be going on a roadshow here in the next several weeks all across the state to get feedback from Wisconsinites in every single corner of the state of Wisconsin. And then as we dive into every single state agency, we're going to have a very thoughtful dialogue on what the priorities are as we move into the state's next 2-year biennium. But again, The contrast is going to be making sure that we have responsible budgeting that doesn't put Wisconsin in a fiscal peril for years to come. This is trying to have a long-term vision and a positive outlook for future generations of our state. I mean, we're talking about education long-term. We're talking about our workforce long-term, long-term care, our healthcare systems. So many of our systems right now are facing, they're on the razor's edge right now. And if we don't, and if we're not careful on the approach that we take, it's really going to be the difference maker of in the next budget after that, of whether or not we're going to be in serious trouble. And again, we have come such a long way over the last 10 years where we went from billion-dollar deficits to billion-dollar surpluses, and we certainly don't want to put ourselves in the position where that we find ourselves backsliding and losing over a decade of progress.
I don't think liberal or conservative are insult words. I'm not trying to say that, but what I am trying to say is it does divide us. It does show a difference, and we have to get back to normalizing those words, meaning what they do, and not meaning an insult. I think that part is interesting, and we'll see how that develops as we go along here in this political spectrum and all that. I wanted to wrap up with something here, sir, because I think actually whether you know it's interesting you're on the job over there at Midstate, because I think we're all pretty fortunate that you're still even doing this whole senator thing. And you're in politics and everything, because you recently were on the job over at Harley-Davidson. And if I was on the job over there, I don't know if I would leave. I'm not sure they would have to kick me out of that building. I might leave radio just to go work at Harley. What was that like?
It was super fun. So last month when I was on the job series, I spent the day out at the Rothschild Motorcycle Company, in which, you know, I walked past that building more times than I can count. I didn't even know they existed. And when we set this up, I mean, it was so cool. They do custom jobs and custom builds. And what's really unique is that they are so well known in their craft and their precision to detail is that they'll get bikes from the 1920s, the 1930s and 40s shipped to them to be restored. And so I got to work on some of these builds and take apart motors, put them back together. And it was really fun. At the end of the day, the owner of the shop's like, well, if you ever want to ride a motorcycle or you want to buy one, you know where to come find us. And I just kind of chuckled and said, if I were to show up at my house with a brand new motorcycle, I'm pretty sure divorce papers would be following. So I think that's a long-term conversation I'll have to have with my wife and maybe get her out there to take a look at some of these bikes. But in the meantime, it was just fun to learn more about the about their shop and about their rich history.
Two last things, sir. I did want to thank you for you also, I noticed on your social media, I usually check that before we get on with us and everything, you put out a post about Holocaust Remembrance Day. It may seem simple to just put up a little post and everything, but I can tell you from my people, from just people in general, that stuff is very appreciated, and representing like that means a lot. So I appreciate you doing those kind of things that you always have. I've seen you do that kind of stuff for many, many years and everything, so greatly appreciate that. And did want to also mention you have a colleague. February is American Heart Month, and you have a staffer over there, Jason, who did something pretty cool recently. We wanted to give a shout out to him and what he did.
Yeah, so obviously, it's National Heart Month, and so in response to that, one of my staffers, Jason Knack, became CPR certified, which I think is very important, and one of the reasons why. And one of my previous sessions, was proud to support legislation that would teach mandatory CPR classes in high school, because there was a story from a few years back where some high school students actually rescued an individual who had a cardiac arrest and saved his life. And so it's a simple thing to do, and it really can be a life changer.
I couldn't agree with you more. I've been talking about that for a long time myself. I think that I don't think it'd be asking too much to have that as I don't know about mandatory, but definitely an option for kids growing. You know, when you graduate high school, you know how to do CPR. We'd have so many generations of kids growing up where everybody knows how to do that simple thing. I shouldn't say simple, but it's not something that we're asking them to learn algebra. You know, it's not that difficult. I think it's a good idea. Always appreciate the conversation with you, sir. We always have an open dialogue between each other, and you always do a great job of putting up with me. I appreciate that.
Hey, happy to, James.
Yeah, thanks for the conversation. We'll talk again next month. You have a good weekend.
You as well.
Yeah. State Senator Patrick Teston joining us. We'll talk to him again next month. Coming up in part two, we'll talk with our friends from Wisconsin Rapids Community Theater right here on Morning Magazine at WFHR.